All right, everybody, the Board of Forestry is back in session, and we would like to invite Doug Graff, head of our fire protection division chief, to give us a presentation on our fire season readiness. Doug.
All right. Good morning, Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Daugherty for the, State Forester Hirsch. I'm looking at everyone to avoid that. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for the Department of Forestry. I'll be joined today with Deputy Chief Ron Graham on video, who will largely do the presentation. Today, we have a standing agenda item for the board during fire season. Begins in June, fire season updates. And we really try to close these out in October, but we have extended them in years past up and through November. So let's hope for a closure this year. Largely, it's a status update on current fire status, our readiness, and then the outlook for the fire season. With that, Ron Graham, and I will advance the slides, Ron.
Very good. Thank you, Chief Graff. Good morning, Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester Hirsch. I am Ron Graham. I currently serve as the Deputy Chief of Operations in the Fire Protection Division for the Oregon Department of Forestry, and it's an honor to be here with you today to update you on the fire season outlook and our readiness efforts. The big driving factor this year, and one of the large driving factors annually in our fire season outlooks, is drought. As you can see by the map depicted in front of you, the large dark brown, dark red areas are areas of extreme to exceptional drought. Currently, we have 15 Oregon counties that have declared drought, and one more county is pending. They've made their declaration request to Umatilla, and that request is pending. For some of the areas in Central Oregon, for three counties, kind of right there in Central Oregon, this is a second year of this level of drought. So it's settling in, it's building in. And in the big picture, we're seeing drought strengthening across much of the West. That does cause concern for us. As we know, our partner states, our neighboring states, will have similar fire conditions that we have and likely will be just as busy as we expect to be. Next slide. When we look at our weather outlooks, this is for the months of June, July, and August. Again, the darker the color on the map, the higher the probability that we will be above normal temperatures. And you can see much of the state, almost all of it, with the exception of the far little northwest corner, is showing in a fairly dark orange color, which means there's strong indicators that over these 3 months, we will see higher than normal temperatures. Next slide. This slide represents precipitation outlook for the same months of June, July, and August. And the stronger the brown tan colors, the larger the possibility that we will see a departure from average precipitation. As you know, going into July and August, those are our driest months of the year to begin with. We don't get a lot of rainfall outside some coastal rain and valley rains, sometimes very little to none. The only other exception is as we get thunderstorms that roll through, some of them might produce, you know, rainfall, others might be of the dry nature. So when you couple the above normal potential temps, below normal potential precipitation, and the wild card of thunderstorm and lightning activity, it's something we're watching very closely, of course. Next slide, please. From the National Predictive Services shop, this is the significant wildfire potential outlook for the month of June. They look at all those factors of weather, fuels, everything that we do in fire history and occurrence. You can see much of the central part of the state is in red. That's indicating we have higher potential for significant wildfire. You can see this extends up in Washington, down to California, the Southwest and the Great Basin, as well as Hawaii. This is a good indicator. We also monitor daily our significant fire potential for ODF. And the one factor we introduce into our significant fire outlook versus this national product is a financial component based on potential for large, costly fires and resource loss. Next slide, please. And as you can see in July, much of the state becomes in that higher potential category. You can see that, you know, pretty much the whole western two-thirds of the state up into Washington indicates that the Southwest is going to maybe get a little bit of monsoonal relief and get some moisture and not be in that. But California strengthening and continuing in through the Great Basin and a little bit into the central Rockies. Again, as we go into our busy months, more competition. And then you can see finally in August, much of the northern Rockies and into the northern Great Plains has that elevated risk. And our risk does not really change. The outlook currently only goes through June, July, and August. We'll await the next update here at the beginning of July, which will bring us through September. You know, and as Chief Graf said, hopefully by then, the majority of our fire activity will be decreased by that point in time. Next slide. So year to date, these are of June 7th, a little bit dated, and it does take time for our fire database to catch up to what is happening on the ground. As you might recall, we have a key performance measure of 98% of our fires kept at 10 acres or less, and year to date right now, we're at 95%. That is not uncommon. We tend to run in the 94 to 96% average. You can see the driver so far has been human-caused fires, lightning making up only a small percentage of our fires in the state. I will say, though, that this does not contain the acres burned in the current Joseph Canyon fire, where we're estimating about 3,000 acres of ODF protection. That is a lightning-caused fire, so those acres will increase on this. And as comparison to our 10-year average, normally we would see about 144 fires. We're currently over 324. And normally on average, the 10-year, 1,371 acres burned, with this year, 3,644 plus the additional Joseph Canyon fire acres. So considerable amount of fires above average, considerable amount of acres burned. All this, even though, you know, we've had extremely effective initial attack success. We currently have an interagency type 2 incident management team from the Pacific Northwest teams managing the Joseph Canyon and Dry Creek fire, but we have not had to deploy an ODF type 1 incident management team yet. Despite the fact we've had probably 8 to 10 now qualifying large fires from Klamath Lake District, Southwest Oregon District, Douglas Forest Protective Association, and at Northeast Oregon being the districts that have had the larger fire activity, we haven't had to deploy a team. So very successful initial attack, keeping costs low, keeping resource loss low, and all of our districts have been actively engaged in fire throughout the calendar year. We currently have 7 districts in declared fire season. And next Wednesday, Western Oregon District will join that to make 8, leaving really only our remaining Northwest Oregon districts to go into fire season. And it's been a busy year. As I mentioned, those large fires, if you recall back to the end of March, the Bull Springs fire in the Central Oregon District burned over 200 acres outside of Bend, prompted evacuations, and triggered us to evaluate whether or not we would pursue FEMA fire mitigation grant funding for that. Ultimately, we did not, because weather was on our side and good, safe, aggressive initial attack quickly contained that fire and kept it at a manageable level. There was one outbuilding lost in that fire. Next slide, please. I will add, though, before I go to that, Doug, if you could go back. Statewide, the picture is similar. So all jurisdictions, and again, a lot of the fire statistics haven't caught up. Statewide right now, we're looking at about 473 fires for over 7,300 acres burned. And again, that's probably not inclusive of our Joseph Canyon acres. So right now, you know, ODF is well over half, almost two thirds of the fires and a good percentage of the acres burned. Similar situation on the statewide look is that right now, human caused fires are the big drivers for the number of fires and acres burned. Thanks, Doug. Let's go to the next slide. One of our keys to success in, as I mentioned, early initial attack and safe, you know, aggressive initial attack, but, you know, early detection is one of our other keys to, you know, our initial attack success. We do that a number of ways. Again, with the safe and aggressive initial attack, we have our PART Navia multi-mission aircraft that allows us to use forward-looking infrared and night vision goggle technology to detect fires, and also the camera detection system that we have currently in place. And we do have a proposal that's included in the current 762 fire omnibus bill that is proposing adding 15 new cameras and sites. It's about a $2.5 million proposal that includes the personnel, equipment, everything to get those projects completed and up and running. So again, the quicker we can detect fires, the quicker we can respond to them, the smaller they are, the less they cost, and the less resource loss. Next slide, please. Our aviation resources are another cornerstone of our initial attack success. In addition to our, call it standard severity complement, this year, you know, through the emergency board, we were giving funding starting back in January to run through the remainder of this current fiscal and biennium. That allowed us to acquire contract resources for severity, whether it's aviation, heavy equipment, or engines. You know, it gave us the ability to procure these contract resources, and we've done that. Given the situation I've described with the fire activity and the fire conditions, we've worked with over four contract companies, provided aerial and ground resources to be at the ready across our districts where the need is high. And those resources have been actively engaged in fires this year. The aviation resources have flown over 45 flight hours and delivered over 10,000 gallons of water and fire retardant already. This much needed boost to our system through the emergency board is something that we have continued to ask for in our policy option package and included again in 762, the fire omnibus bill. It's a huge, huge part of our success this year, having the ability to acquire, procure, and have those resources at the ready when many of our federal partners, even though they brought on some resources, you know, they're looking at the national picture and where they need them elsewhere as well. So having those resources available exclusively to us in the state is a huge boost to our system. Next slide, please. And as I mentioned, the emergency board really delivered for us starting back in January, allowing us to fill some limited duration positions, 33 total positions. This is 25 full-time limited duration permanent type people, and then adding 1 month to seasonal time to 150 of our seasonals to get those folks on and trained and ready sooner. I can attest to the 11 positions that we've filled right here in the Salem Protection Headquarters, part of that complement, that we have added capacity, whether it's in fire cost recovery, fire business and finance, fire cash operations, fire mapping and intelligence support, aviation, safety, you name it. Those positions have definitely delivered. We are tracking metrics. You know, what kind of value did they add? What did we accomplish by having those positions on? And again, we certainly hope to continue those positions. I've spoken to the aviation capacity already at $5 million, and we're actively completing the procurement processes on the large air tanker requisition, as well as a Type 1 heavy helicopter. And wildfire risk mitigation is also a component of what the emergency board funded through strategic fuel reduction projects all over the state. This is money that can be used regardless of the ownership of the ground. It's where the need was the highest, the priorities were the highest to mitigate fuels across all ownerships. And that's a significant general fund investment. Next slide. All right, I will pause here. That is the end of agenda item 3, your fire season readiness and outlook update.
Thank you, Ron. In summary, bottom line, folks, we're looking at another difficult fire season coming at us this year. You saw the weather outlook, and the data suggests that year to date also, with two times the numbers of fires and four times the acres burned. We have a little reprieve right now that we've enjoyed some cooler temps with some moistures. A little bit of risk on the wind as those fronts move through over the next couple of days, and we'll see a warming trend begin later this weekend. And this trend, I would say, The risks has come in waves to us. Staten as early as March 30th, as Deputy Chief Ron Graham highlighted, with heat waves and winds. We watch for those. It comes in pulses. And every time we get a little reprieve, 3 to 5 days with cooler temperatures, that staves off potential for large fire. That's a benefit. But the trend line does not look good. Looks like another very difficult fire season. With that, take any questions.
Brenda McComb.
Thank you, Jim. Doug, first of all, this is impressive, the work that your group is doing to keep people and property safe, and I know that's recognized across the state, so please don't take what I'm about to ask you as questioning that in any way. I really do value what the work that your group is doing, but it comes at a cost, a financial cost, obviously, and that's something that we're grappling with. But it also comes at a greenhouse gas emission cost. And I'm wondering if your group keeps track of the hours that vehicles are active, such as the planes and the helicopters and the trucks and all that stuff. Is there a way of getting an estimate of what the greenhouse gas emissions are associated with fire protection?
Brenda, I have not seen any data to that largely across the wildfire community. And we don't track that currently relative to emissions in terms of what the suppression activity results.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick follow-up, if I could. So I think it would be... I'm sure you don't have the capacity to do that. So I want to preface what I'm going to say next with that. But I think it would be helpful to the carbon side of the agency to begin to understand what these costs are. And I'm not sure how you do that. And I'm not sure where the money comes from. And I certainly don't know where the capacity comes from, but I'm just raising that. The other question I have for you is, are you able to get back on track with prescribed fire under the COVID restriction, after the COVID restrictions lift?
Yeah, Brenda, last fall, we really turned back to the standard of prescribed burning. At the beginning of COVID, we worked closely with Oregon Health Authority and largely stalled prescribed burning that spring. We understand the value, of course, and the board has deliberated and advanced prescribed burning policy for the state of Oregon to advance that. So it's critically important that we get back on track. This fall, we opened the window back up to the previous standards that the board set. And that's carried forward until we can move past that risk to smoke into our communities. The numbers are down. Given that experience, we were in the range of prescribed burning at 180,000 acres across the state. And that was split across private landowners and public landowners. And that's a significant number of prescribed burn acres treated on an annual basis relative to our western states. So we really have a strong program. That dropped into, I think, just over 120,000 acres, given the COVID experience. So still favorable, but we want to get back well above 180 is our future desired condition.
Thank you, Doug.
Arlen.
Doug, I want to thank you for your intense leadership and efforts in this arena. And I especially want to thank you for keeping those FEMA invoices up to date, because we're going to need that cash. But I come from North Central Oregon, Sherman County, and was talking to some of the wheat ranchers there this last week. And we literally have some wheat being torn out. And I've never heard that in my, you know, entire lifetime, because they're not going to, some of that wheat's not going to finish a crop. It's that dry. And they take 2 years of rainfall for 1 year crop. So every other year it's summer fallow or crop. But one of the ranchers said, yeah, he now has to stay home for fire season. And I've also never heard that from a wheat rancher in my entire lifetime. Just a reminder on the $5 million of wildfire mitigation. I want to put that in perspective. The U.S. Forest Service numbers say on the 19 million acres of public lands in Oregon, we have burned 14% over the last 5 years of those public lands. And the U.S. Forest Service scientists in the Wildfire Council said we should expect a 3 to 4x growth in wildfire potential. And certainly these drought maps spell out that potential. They also talked about the extreme burnable fuels load that is out there. And the Wildfire Council recommended 5.6 million acres be mitigated over a 20-year period, something of high-risk acres, at the tune of about $4 billion. So 5 million, I just want to put that number in perspective to what the Wildfire Council recommended, and also recognize how much of that is on federal lands. And they really prioritize those lands around high population centers. So I don't want us to lose perspective or sight on what that council recommended and just what we're looking at here, the sheer potential of how big of an issue this is for the state of Oregon. I'm not so sure we've got a bigger one out there, or if we do, I'm not sure what it is.
Kyle, I appreciate the expansion on the reality of what we're facing in fire conditions and how that impacts agriculture, particularly your example in the wheat country. Unprecedented is the word I continue to hear across the board. The Governor's Wildfire Council recommendation for context and further emphasis suggests a $200 million investment in mitigation on an annual basis to treat 300,000 acres. So that's a big, audacious goal, and it's good to have those in place as we contemplate advancing fire protection, mitigation, and community protections with commensurate with the risk we're facing. And I put a finer point on the unprecedented challenge we have and the reality of fire conditions on the landscape. For the last 40 years, we've been tracking significant precipitation during fire season. And those days of significant precipitation have been declining 1% a year. So from 1980 to current, we have 40% less days of precipitation during fire season than what we've had four decades ago. So to consider what our future looks like and looking at our past, that's hard to do with this significant change that we've been experiencing on conditions on the ground. So I just wanted to put a finer point. And there's a number, every metric I look at relative to fire risk, you know, leads me to believe we are challenged in a significant way moving forward. And I appreciate the board's engagement and leadership on this critical topic.
Doug, I'd like to move us on to the next agenda item. And I will just say one thing. I don't think this board ever adequately acknowledged the spectacular job that your division did last year with the COVID threat, and the management of that was nothing short of amazing. And the fact that you did that when we had this incredible firestorm event throughout all of that, and not just the management of COVID, but the safety of the firefighters that was managed so well. And I just think you guys deserve a huge congratulations for all of that.
Thank you for that.